Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Cracker Barrel Old Country Store is one of many casual dining chains experiencing a loss in income due to a combination of factors, including inflation and rising prices. The company set out to refresh its brand and attract some much-needed new customers. But the unveiling of a brand refresh resulted in a public outcry and a financial hit for the company. The end result was that the company quickly scrapped the changes and reverted back to its original logo. In addition, Cracker Barrel found itself caught up in culture wars around the country. They were looking to modernize their brand with plans to remodel restaurants to give them a bright, more updated feel, but that has all been rolled back. We're looking at the Cracker Barrel kerfuffle this hour and the new reality of company rebranding. Joining us now is Brian Hipscher, Senior Lecturer of Marketing and Logistics at the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. Welcome back to All Sides, Brian.
Hi, nice to see you, Amy.
So were you surprised at all this backlash over the Cracker Barrel brand refresh?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, something that happens quite often in the business world without much to do really kind of got out of control quickly.
You mean like companies change their logos all the time and no one notices?
Yeah, people tweak their logos all the time. Mm-hmm. And now their logo was maybe a little bit more extreme in mm-hmm. the way that they changed it, which probably caught more attention. But they've been working on this for a while, actually, with really not much said.
So we're on the radio, so I don't have the visual. Mm-hmm. Can you describe for our listeners the old logo versus the new logo, just
sure.
very simply?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, so the old logo had a bean, essentially, and with Cracker Barrel inside of the bean. And part of the Cracker Barrel heritage is they sold beans, baked beans, this type of thing. And then they had Uncle Herschel, which is...
That's the old guy.
The old guy, yeah. And he's sitting in a rocking chair, which you'd see at a Cracker Barrel. And he's got a Cracker Barrel sort of in front of him. Mm-hmm. So the old logo was... pretty detailed, had a lot of different elements to it, which could be hard to maybe see visually, especially in the digital world. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure they were probably thinking, hey, how do we simplify this logo a little bit so that it's easier to read?
Now describe what they simplified it to.
Yeah, so what they simplified it to is essentially a barrel, but they turned the barrel sideways. And unless you know that that's what you're looking for, maybe you wouldn't know that that's a barrel.
I will admit, I did not know it was a barrel on its side. Yeah.
And then they just had Cracker Barrel in a similar-ish font to what they had before inside of that yellow shape.
Okay. So with this rollout, from a marketing standpoint, what did Cracker Barrel do right in the rollout? Did they do anything right?
Sure. I'm sure they did. Well, so I think their intentions were right. They're mm-hmm. trying to figure out how do we maybe have a logo that's easier to read, mm-hmm. you know, and especially since they've started to do more things digitally in their marketing efforts, where in the past, most of their marketing was billboards that you'd find on the highway as you're driving down the road. So they're trying to connect more with their customers, and probably someone said, hey, how do we make this easier to see in a digital space? But the rebrand is really bigger than just a logo. Mm-hmm. They're really trying to revitalize the restaurants themselves. So some examples like new menu and trying to find out maybe some new menu items that would resonate more mm-hmm. with customers. I think they had some success with that. They actually had 4 quarters of successive sales growth, which has been difficult in this environment. Then with the remodeling of the store... Mm-hmm. I think that also, there was some success there. Some people liked the way that that looked, but that's been going on for about a year now. They've had 4 locations, and there are some people even a year ago who were saying, I don't know about this new look. And maybe they didn't listen to those folks as much as they could have.
They were getting rid of the like country chairs, like a country kitchen kind of chairs. And they were adding booths.
They added booths. They changed the color scheme. Like if you can think in your mind of what a Cracker Barrel looks like when you go in, it's kind of dark, you know, and cozy and, you know, that type
crowded.
Of thing. And crowded. Yeah. And it takes you back to maybe a long time ago, whereas the refresh or remodeled locations were much lighter and brighter on the inside, more of a charming Southern country kitchen, you would say.
So maybe looking at a brand refresh was something they did right. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. They've been around for a long time, so maybe that's something they did right. But what did they do wrong in all of this? Because I think there's a lot there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think maybe the biggest thing is understanding why. Like, why do they need to do a rebrand or a refresh? And is the refresh actually solving the core business problem that they have? So their stock price has gone down over the last 5 years from like $140 a share to $40 a share. They've brought in a new leader to try and help turn this thing around. And you've got to imagine the new leader has a lot of pressure to show something. And a lot of times seeing something visually happen is something that's for all the stakeholders involved. Like, oh, something's different. Maybe, you know, we should go in there. If you take a step back and look at kind of macro to that whole space, you know, if you're driving down the highway and you're going to make a stop, a lot of times it's because you need gas.
Okay? Yeah. Okay.
And gas stations have changed a lot. They have a lot more food, a lot better food options. And I'm sure that that's taken a piece out of what was traditionally a Cracker Barrel customer, you know, that's, hey, I need some food. I'm going to make my stop and this sort of thing. So I wonder if they judge that correctly, like the reason their sales have been declining, is it because they have a lot more competition right there at those stops, or if it's because of some other things. Maybe it's their menu and updating their menu, and I think that they've made some changes there to make that better.
So even with this whole kerfuffle, as I like to call it, the White House even laid in on the in the Cracker Barrel logo. And they took credit, the White House took credit for going back to its original. So much like many aspects of our lives, were you surprised politics entered into this conversation?
Yes. And I think recently it's something that all marketers and businesses need to think about. It needs to be on your checklist of things before you make a change to ask yourself, how could this possibly be misunderstood through a lens of a political landscape? And I think this was one that probably wasn't anticipated by the Cracker Barrel team to think that it could become a political or divisive type of issue.
So basically, it was that the backlash was that Cracker Barrel went woke, for lack of a better word. I mean, that's what everyone keeps saying. They got rid of the old guy. They got rid of the what everyone knew them for, and they made themselves super modern looking.
Right. And I don't really get that, to be honest with you. I don't understand that. But there's certainly, I would say, on both sides of the political spectrum, people who are out there looking for ways to turn things that seem benign into something that's like a life-changing situation.
Yeah. Like the very first person to comment on it probably went viral with their comment, right?
And
they win.
Oh, is working. Let's pile on. Yeah.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Cracker Barrel rebranding backlash with Brian Hipscher, Senior Lecturer of Marketing and Logistics at the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. So Cracker Barrel's average customer is over 65. Mm-hmm. That is not any advertiser's target demographic. So how should they go about attracting younger customers but still maintain this folksy image that obviously they have to keep?
Yeah, no, that is tricky. And in the restaurant space, or really any retail space, a lot of times they say, hey, it's probably not a good business strategy when your core target demographic is dying. you need to find new folks, and everyone's trying to figure out how to get more young people to come in to give you more life. So for Cracker Barrel, they've actually already been doing some things that are pretty cool to help them improve in that area. If you go check out their TikTok, it's fun. I mean, it's
Cracker
very
Barrel
relevant.
Has a TikTok.
They have it. Yeah, right. Believe it or not, they do. Okay. And now this has certainly brought a lot more attention to them and their TikTok. But if you go back and even look at some of their past TikToks, they were getting pretty good attention. And the kind of messaging definitely would resonate with a younger audience. So really kind of giving ways for younger people to connect to this idea of nostalgia is a good thing, I think, that they were doing.
Well, they were really leaning into the peg games, which mm-hmm. is on all the tables.
Yes.
Didn't they have like a rewards program where you earned pegs?
Yeah, right? And that they even introduced a rewards program. In the last year, they've introduced a rewards program. And again, that's an example of modernizing the brand in a way that relates, you know, to a younger audience.
But using something that is well known for Cracker Barrel,
absolutely.
Playing the peg game.
Yes, yes.
So they just need to lean into the barrel and the pegs and the barrel and the rocking chairs.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And give maybe people new reasons to make that part of their life or a fun aspect of what they're doing and what they're about.
Okay, so there are ways to appeal to a younger audience, but keep your over 65 customers still happy.
Sure, absolutely.
Isn't this a challenge for a lot of casual restaurants in general? I mean, we're hearing about a lot of restaurants closing, a lot of restaurants struggling, you know, from Red Lobster, TGI Fridays, name it, they're disappearing. Everything costs more. So how do restaurants stick around?
Yeah, you need to be differentiated. And I think that was something, what might be one of Cracker Barrel's core strengths, is it is a very unique and differentiated experience. The idea of the gift shop, the idea of the nostalgia, the idea that you can actually close your eyes and very easily imagine, like, what's it like in there. Mm-hmm. But somehow finding a way to make sure that that's still relevant today. A lot of these restaurants, the ones that you even just mentioned off your list, they kind of all became the same place, you know, they all kind of followed the same playbook. And when you do that, you don't stand out anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But overall, don't companies run the risk of seeming old fashioned or like fading away if they don't update their brands? Like, isn't it a good business practice to occasionally take a brand look?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You should be looking at, you know, the visuals or what your brand really stands for and making mm-hmm. sure that it's still resonating with your core customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Cracker Barrel, if they would look and understand like, hey, here's who our core customers are and what they believe in and what they like about us. Certainly they have customers today mm-hmm. that are coming there and they're going there for a reason, right? Understanding what is that reason and making sure that, well, how do we make sure more people understand their reason for coming, you know? Mm-hmm. Trying to get that message across on billboards can be really difficult. So they've actually changed some things about the way they're going to market and talking about themselves into the world, which I think gives them that platform.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the new logo they made is so different from the old one? Mm. Did they not run any tests? Did they not run it by anyone? I mean, I find that hard to imagine.
I would also find that really hard to imagine. I do know with the store refreshes that they did, that they've been testing those for more than a year. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is even in those tests, when they initially rolled these things out, they did get some pretty divisive comments about like, hey, I like the old way. Mm. So it can be hard as a business leader, you know, when you're hearing that, when you're seeing the results, that some people like something and some people don't like something. So what do you do? Mm. You know, do you say, well, enough people didn't like it, I just won't make any change? Or, well, enough people liked it that, hey, directionally, this is where we're trying to go and we should lean into that. So it
so you think
be tricky.
They ran it by people, but they ran it by the wrong people? I don't.
Well, I mean, what do you do if half the people say, yeah, we like your new logo and half the people say, no, we hate it?
I don't know. Probably probably hire another company to start
yes,
over.
I think so. I think that's what I would do. You probably want to have maybe a line where you say, yeah, we need to know that this is a better situation than that.
With all of these refreshes, I was reading about, you know, the restaurant remodels, adding booths, lightening it up,
yep.
getting rid of some of the wall decor. Mm-hmm. None of it mentioned whether they kept the store. Was there still the store?
Yeah, they still had the store. It was just much brighter and refreshed and real. I would say really was a stark difference from
less stuff.
Yeah, less stuff and more organized, you know, like
I speak as a parent. Yes. I could not stand if there's a wait at Cracker Barrel. That is the worst thing because you stand there and your kid begs you to buy so much junk.
That's the brilliance of it, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I would say, you know, the interior, the design that they went with was super organized and some people, maybe the word they use is corporate-y, but you don't want to hear that, you know, in
okay.
an experience. Yeah.
So when you teach your marketing students about brands and logos, will Cracker Barrel now be your big case study? on what
not
to
do. Yeah, sadly, it's probably been one of the case studies to say, like, hey, what happened here? There are some things to talk about that, hey, here's why. Here's why they did it and what they're trying to do. And, you know, here's some things to be definitely careful about.
What lessons learned will you teach marketing students so they don't make this mistake, you know, when they have their marketing job 5 years from now?
Yeah. So I would love to get more information from Cracker Barrel, and I'm sure it'll come out at some point. Like, hey, what did that research really tell you? Mm-hmm. You know, and how did you decide to move forward with this instead of saying, hold on, we need to maybe go back and to the drawing board on how to do this. So before I had that, I'd want to be careful. But if it did come out that, hey, there was enough evidence that you shouldn't move forward, it's not uncommon that executives move forward and plow through things just because it's what they want to do, you know? Mm. And so that would be a big lesson, I think, to come from that. But also, it always starts with just listening to your customer and understanding them and what they're doing and understanding why you're trying to do something.
Mm. Well, we're running out of time, but I did want to ask you, prior to you said Cracker Barrel is now going to be a big case study.
Yeah.
But prior to that, what was your favorite case study to use to talk about, marketing problems?
Right. Oh, geez. I hate to label all these companies, but, you know, one of them, like Nike, is a good example, where really strong brand. And they decided,
absolutely.
And they decided to no longer sell products in a lot of retail establishments, instead to bring that completely back home and only sell it like online or in Nike stores. They did that and they suffered tremendously. Mm. A lot of other brands entered the market and now they've gone back. They've had to switch up course and go back to selling products in a lot of the retail establishments.
Oh, so there was a period of time when you couldn't get Nike shoes.
It was about 4 years.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah, and people didn't know.
I would just buy what's on the shelf.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, and a lot of the number of different styles of Nike shoes that you get went way, way, way down. So the sneaker heads, you might call them, they knew that the only place that they could get the shoes was actually online or at a Nike store.
Huh. I had no idea. All right. Well, I'm sure there's many other brands talk about. We'll have you on again the next time some company makes a mistake with a logo. We've been speaking with Brian Hipscher, Senior Lecturer of Marketing and Logistics at the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. Thanks for being with us today, Brian.
Thanks, Amy.
Coming up, we're going to talk about how the Cracker Barrel kerfuffle represents a new marketing reality. And that's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
It's rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Coca-Cola is one of America's most iconic brands. In the 1980s, someone thought it was a good idea to change Coke's formula. It didn't go well and resulted in Coca-Cola quickly bringing back their original formula and rebranding it Coke Classic. Fast forward to the recent kerfuffle over Cracker Barrel's logo refresh, the removal of the image of Uncle Herschel, and even the barrel. But the backlash about the change was quick and fierce. Within days, the restaurant went back to its original logo. According to experts, we're entering a new era of branding. Joining us is Jeremy Slagle, designer and illustrator and principal for Slagle Design here in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides, Jeremy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So a recent PR Weekly article said that the backlash over the Cracker Barrel logo refresh represents a new reality, a new marketing reality. How so?
Well, I think a big part of it is we've been changing brands for generations, far before I was on this earth, but we didn't have social media to spread it, to get reaction and get response. I think a huge part of all of this is the way that social media is responding to it, how people are freaking out about stuff and sharing it to the level that they are. I have very mixed feelings about the Cracker Barrel logo. I actually think in some ways it was done very well. I think there were some things that they also did that were, especially in retrospect as they look back on it, were pretty big mistakes as well.
What do you think they did well?
I think, so I'm a big fan of simplicity when it comes to logos, simply because a logo, there's a guy who's principal of Pentagram, his name is DJ Stout, who ironically just redid Austin's new logo that's kind of currently floating around.
Like the city of Austin?
Yeah, the city of Austin's new logo just came out and people are that's the next one.
Commenting.
If you haven't seen it yet,
no, I'll
coming.
Google it later. All right.
But I heard DJ speak and he said something that has always stuck with me, and that is, if a logo isn't simple enough to embroider on a baseball cap, it's not a logo, it's an illustration.
Oh.
Cracker Barrel's logo, in my opinion, was not a logo. It's an illustration. Mm-hmm. It can't be easily reproduced or embroidered on a baseball cap. I think they would have been much better served had they just taken the type out of it and kept it almost exactly as it was. I don't even care so much about the fact that they integrated a barrel. I didn't know the story of the bean. Or even if they had leaned into it and helped educate the people that are Cracker Barrel fans as to why there's a bean in their logo, you know, take the time to educate and explain. And anytime, it's like the FedEx logo. I don't know if you've ever noticed in the negative space of the FedEx logo, there's an arrow.
Yes, and I was told that years ago, and now I can't unsee it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what happens is when you explain why you do things to the people that are outside of the company, you create a love for that brand at a deeper level. You almost feel like an insider, because now you're like, you're not, next time you're driving down the road and you pass a Cracker Barrel sign and you're with your family, you go, you ever notice the bean shape? You know why they have a bean there? That bean is there because they were originally very famous for their bean soup. Who knew? Right? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But an opportunity to educate people, like if they had just taken and made a simpler version of what they already had that could be easily reproduced. I think Kentucky Fried Chicken actually did this really, really well when they switched to KFC and they took Colonel Sanders from the highly illustrated version that they had and kind of made, they kept him, they didn't remove him completely. But the KFC logo is now just a KFC. It's a red KFC.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't get rid of Colonel Sanders.
And Cracker Barrel got rid of Uncle Herschel,
right,
who I didn't even know was Uncle Herschel until this all happened. Like,
right.
Who knew
Nobody
who that
did.
Guy was?
Yeah. But again, what a great opportunity to educate people and help tell the story behind a brand. Mm-hmm. A good brand is not a logo. A good brand is the story and what people understand and know about it. And the other big critical mistake Cracker Barrel made was switching their restaurants over at the same time. You know, they basically looked like a First Watch. They went from looking like you were having breakfast in, you know, the old woodshed with the iron, you know, the cast iron pans and the fireplace going and like what you expect. And now they've turned it into a First Watch. It's like, if I want First Watch, I'll go to First Watch. That's great.
Too much change too fast.
Too much change too fast. Yep.
Well, and you mentioned Colonel Sanders. I was also going to bring up other famous and infamous. So there's Aunt Jemima, and then there's the Land O'Lakes Maiden, and also Uncle Ben. Yeah. They represented brands for a long time, but they've been retired by their companies because of the controversial history that they symbolized. So do you think that this is a move where companies are moving away from spokespeople? I mean, even though none of those people actually spoke, Aunt Jemima, the Land O'Lakes Maiden, or Uncle Ben. Yeah.
I think there's some fear. One of the brands I worked on within the last couple of years is Snowville Creamery. I don't know if you're familiar with their
brand.
Mail.
Yeah.
So when they contacted me, they were actually getting, it was right around that time when a lot of these characters were being canceled. There was a milkmaid on the front and she's pouring milk out of a pitcher.
Okay.
People were getting pretty hypersensitive about this. Also not realizing that they're a completely woman-owned company.
Yeah.
And woman-run company. They were starting to get letters from some people who were saying, we don't like that you have a woman on the front of your packaging. And one of the reasons they reached out to me was because they said, we're getting concerned about this in light of all these other brands. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, it was time to do an update anyways. It was starting to get a little stale. So I reassured them that it wasn't the woman. It was the position that the woman was in the packaging that people were not resonating with. When we went back and looked at
what, because she was pouring the milk, or
because she's dressed like a servant and she's pouring milk as if she's pouring it for a master, or she's pouring it for somebody.
I see.
But when we got to really be able to tell their story and understand it, they love working on the farm. They love the task of collecting and taking care of good cream and milk because they love their neighbor, and that's why they do what they do. So I was able to reassure them, we don't need to get rid of the milkmaid. We need to make sure people understand that it's a better reflection of who you are and your values. So if you go to Kroger today and you'll see that she's not pouring a pitcher, she's not wearing a bonnet dressed like a servant, she's actually dressed like a proud dairy worker, and she's pouring it out of a can.
I've seen that. Okay. Yeah. Now that you mention it,
yeah.
It's just like the FedEx logo. I hadn't thought about it, but until someone tells you the story, now I'll notice it more.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you even read the copy on the side of the packaging, or you start to understand the story, we help people understand that it's about pride in loving the people who we serve by doing it the old hard way, because that's what serves people best. We're not a giant factory farm that over processes your we're very hands-on, and I think, you know, keeping that story and helping people better understand it and leaning into it versus and helping people understand why you do things the way you do versus freaking out. And I think we did have a problem with cancel culture there for a long time, where people were just reacting to things, mm-hmm. and they were taking away iconic figures, when maybe it was just more of a matter of saying, how do we better educate and actually show honor to these characters or these people that are spokespeople, and show a different way of talking about it versus getting rid of it altogether. And that's not for every single situation. Some needed to go,
yeah,
you know, yeah. But others didn't.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a new era of branding with Jeremy Slagle, designer and illustrator for Slagle Design. So you mentioned when you were telling the Snowville Creamery, mm-hmm. right, example, that it was time. You said it was time for a brand refresh anyway.
Yeah.
How do you know when it's time? Like, why? Like, every company doesn't need a brand refresh.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I had the privilege of also being able to work with Jenny Britton when Jenny's Ice Creams brought their first location outside the North Market. And up until then, Jenny had like three previous logos that she had done. But when she was ready to really go all in, she worked with us to do it. Jenny was very instrumental in helping put Snowville on the map.
Mm-hmm.
She exclusively was buying her cream from Snowville, and Snowville like started to grow and get a lot. What happened though is within the last, I would say 10 years, that the idea of going back to the small creameries, local creameries that do it organic, grass fed, started to take on, and we were starting to get milk from like Pennsylvania that was coming in to Columbus and was showing up right next to and from Indiana and from neighboring states that were starting to encroach on Snowville's branding. And it really did start to look a little bit dated compared to, you know, when Snowville started out, there was no one else was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, being able to really care for a client and understand how to reposition them in a way that's thoughtful is really important. We didn't hit the reset button.
Mm-hmm.
People that were familiar and loved Snowville still are familiar with and love Snowville.
Another campaign that came under fire was American Eagle's Sydney Sweeney, the Great Jeans campaign. Critics argued it promoted eugenics. Conservative commentators praised it, saying it was a stand against woke culture. Going forward, do you think companies are concerned about their brand ending up being weaponized in politics or a culture war?
I think everything, unfortunately, has become political and has become a culture war. And it's kind of ridiculous, in my opinion. I mean, I grew up during the 90s when Abercrombie & Fitch's catalog was just, I mean, it was compared to what they did with Sydney Sweeney is like, it's no comparison. And so like, I feel a little like that didn't trigger me at all to see that commercial. And I think part of it is that we have to realize that not all brands are targeted to us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like, I walk by whenever I'm at Easton Shopping Center, I'll walk by like Vineyard Vines.
Mm-hmm.
I I don't know. I've never been to Martha's Vineyard. I know nothing about the Vineyard Vines brand. I don't know why everybody loves the Little Whale, but there's people who are diehard Vineyard Vines fans, mm-hmm. and I don't get it, and that's okay. Like, and as soon as they start to say, I know you've never been to New England, and I know you've never been to Martha's Vineyard, but we really want you as our customer, so we're willing to water down our brand in order to reach you, then there's a crisis that happens. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of what happened with Cracker Barrel. We need to come to a place in our society where we recognize it's not about us. It's about somebody else sometimes. And it's okay if we're not included in that. That's fine. It's just, you know, we can have the things that we're passionate about and that we love and let other people have theirs without everybody, like, everybody's blowing up on social media about stuff.
Yeah, Cracker Barrel was trying to appeal to a younger audience because the average age of a Cracker Barrel customer was 65, yeah. which is not a demographic anyone wants. Yeah. but they when they made their decisions, they basically forgot about their core customer, right?
Yeah, and I think there could be ways of using even self-deprecating humor oftentimes to help reach that younger crowd. Mm-hmm. I think could have been some really, really good opportunities for them even to just play on the memories of maybe meeting grandpa at Cracker Barrel or spending time with family at Cracker Barrel.
The peg game is my favorite part. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like, that's what I remember.
There's so many ways to like reinvigorate a brand mm-hmm. and not walk away from your core constituency. And I think they did a really poor job of it. Bob Evans, local mm-hmm. Ohio brand, sort of the same sort of thing, has a history around here. I live near Graceland Shopping Center, and they took one of their most central locations a few years ago. They shut it down, redid the whole thing, and when they reopened it, they had big screen TVs on every wall, practically, like over the.
Don't go to Bob Evans to watch TV.
Thank you. who says like I'm gonna go? Well, let's go watch the NFL game tonight. Let's go to Bob Evans. You go to Bob Evans to sit across the table from somebody and have a good conversation over a meal that you know. That you've had before. There's a comfort, yeah. right? You know what to expect. And that location is now a Longhorn Steakhouse.
Yeah.
It's people, when they start to go, well, maybe our problem is this. Let's try it out. Well, you need to put a lot more thought into it than that. You know, you're not BW3. You're not Buffalo Wild Wings.
Definitely not. When we're talking about something like what happened with American Eagle with Sydney Sweeney, are customers demanding that the companies that they go to, that they patronize, share their political views? Do customers want that? Do they want their favorite brands to feel the same way about life that they do?
I think some do. I think that because going back to social media, I think that we hear the 10% of the world that's on the far left or on the far right, the people that want to make a big stink, and the rest of us are all just like, hand me my popcorn. You know, I don't think that the vast majority of Americans really care as much as these things have become an issue. You know, I don't care for the Sydney Sweeney the Sydney Sweeney jeans commercial, but it doesn't bother me because I'm not going to go buy a pair of Sydney Sweeney jeans. They're not talking to me anyways.
Yeah.
So to in my opinion, I'm not going to have a strong opinion about it because it's not for me.
What about another example of the idea of going too woke too fast was Bud Light. Bud Light had a marketing campaign that they got into a little bit of heat for. Yeah. What do you make of that?
They got into a lot of heat.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in the 90s and remembering what Bud Light commercials used to be like.
Frogs and the Clydesdale horses. Yep.
And mm-hmm. yeah, and the tailgate parties where, you know, people are obviously having a good time and there's a serious party atmosphere and scantily mm-hmm. clad women and all of the rest that came along with the old Bud Light commercials and stuff mm-hmm. like that. They have a target demographic and it is mostly male. It is mostly men who love to tailgate, are into sports. They aren't especially interested in spending a lot of money on their beer because they're not drinking it for the taste. Mm-hmm. And they completely missed their target demographic with it.
Do you think after the Sydney Sweeney thing with American Eagle and then Bud Light from a few years ago, do you think that companies going forward will be more selective about influencers they work with, because influencers is where things are heading.
Absolutely. They should be. Whether it's backfired on you or not, you know, whoever is speaking on your behalf should be somebody who shares your values, for sure, and shares the values of the people who buy your product.
Hmm. Yeah. So is this going to be a whole new marketing piece of industry where they're going to have to, every marketing company is going to have to hire like an influencer analyst to make sure they're picking right?
I kind of hope that the influencer thing is a fad, honestly. Hmm. You know, I think we're starting to see more subtle forms of marketing where it's not an influencer saying like, I not only do I, you know, buy these leggings or these jeans, but I believe in everything about this company. It's like, mm-hmm. I feel like we've gotten to a point where buying, supporting, you know, whether it's Chick-fil-A, I mean, there's just so many different brands out there when you, you know, Hobby Lobby, when it comes mm-hmm. to a lot of these different brands, and you can decide where you want to spend your money. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that people don't understand. If you don't like it, don't spend your money there. If you mm-hmm. like it, spend your money there. I'm one of those kind of people who doesn't really care so much about the company's political views, unless it's something that I absolutely disagree with, in which case I'll try to find an alternative. Mm-hmm. But I just think we've gotten way overly sensitive about a lot of this stuff.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Jeremy Slagle, designer and illustrator and principal for Slagle Design here in Columbus. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jeremy.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk to a graphic artist about what goes into logo design. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Starbucks, Pepsi, Gap, and most recently, Cracker Barrel, are just a few of the American brands that have redesigned their logo. Tinkering with a logo customers have become familiar with can be a win-lose prospect for a well-known, beloved brand. We're talking about the fallout from the Cracker Barrel rebranding this hour, and joining us now to talk about what goes into logo design is Amber Mayberry, graphic artist and owner of A. Payne's Designs here in Columbus. Her clients include the City of Columbus and Franklin University. Welcome to All Sides, Amber.
Thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
Could you pull your chair in just a little
sure.
bit? That'll sound better. Yeah, we got it. Yeah, all that's right. Awesome. All right. So since this show was inspired by the kerfuffle created by the Cracker Barrel logo change, I just wanted to recap. They went from a logo that had Uncle Herschel, a rocking chair, and a barrel, and said Old Country Store, to just the words Cracker Barrel in a barrel turned on its side. That's it. So from a graphic artist, designer and a graphic artist perspective, mm-hmm. what did you think of the redesign?
Personally, I thought it was too simplified. Although we are in a time where being modern and simplified and chic is the mm-hmm. goal, I think a lot of people, and even some of us designers, we don't really sometimes take time to really identify the narrative behind the logo. And so I really wish I was a fly on the wall with the team who designed this before and now after everything's hit the fan. To really understand, why did we do that? Why was there a need? In my opinion, I didn't have a problem with the original logo. Mm-hmm. I love authenticity. I love to have a piece or elements of the actual brand be felt. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can't share the whole storyline in a simple mark, right? A logo. But I believe the before and after was drastically different. And the uproar we've seen in the media and the news of social media, I don't think is just about the element of the logo. I think it's what it meant for a lot of people.
And the idea about the logo, the Cracker Barrel logo being changed to mm-hmm. be more simplified, did that have social media completely in mind? They wanted it to be able to be read in the tiny little icon in your Instagram story or on TikTok. Is that the problem here of why they went so simple?
You know, that's a good question. And I think it could be probably twofold here. In my opinion, I don't know how much they thought about the why. Mm. So for me and the people I work with and the clients I connect with, I'm always asking the why question. What was wrong with it? I mean, it was a logo for over four decades mm-hmm. plus that has been true, tried. It's in the mindset of everyone. We're identified with it. And so I guess they were trying to make it a little more iconic, make it more modern. I think the mainstream logos we're used to seeing, especially on social media, mm-hmm. are very simplified, very easy to scale, as all logos should be. But to dumb it down to that, I actually seen a comment online through all the hundreds mm-hmm. of responses that it was just like a Canva logo someone slapped together that, you know, and yeah. people felt like the weight of what it originally was dumbed down too much.
Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of logo changes mm-hmm. over time. Gap famously got a lot of backlash years ago for changing yeah. their logo. Cracker Barrel received widespread, you know, hate for their logo redesign. What should companies be taking into consideration when they do a brand refresh so that this doesn't happen, I guess?
So back to my why question, mm-hmm. why are we doing this? And I think that why question should not only be focused on the internal teams and the people who are in the rooms making the board decisions, the big decisions. But I wonder, and maybe they did, I wonder, did they do any focus groups? Did they find...
That's the big question. Didn't they ask anybody?
Yeah. Did they ask anyone? Again, yeah. this is not a logo that was just established 5 years ago or even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, you have decades of brand perception and connectivity to this mark to just wipe it away. I guess it's just... If we're going to dumb it down, it has to be a why. So when you're thinking about rebranding, in my opinion, whether you're a small brand or a big brand like this, we really need to think about why are we doing this and then fine-tuning it accordingly. One example that comes to mind was Little Caesars. So many years ago, mm-hmm. their older original logo with Pizza Pizza Man, I don't know what his name is, mm-hmm. They still have that same, it's similar. They simplified it slightly, but they didn't take away the character and the feel of the original design. So mm-hmm. if we're going to redesign, making sure that we're doing it realistically and that we're only changing the elements that we need to. We don't need to simplify it so much so that we take away the storyline, the narrative that people have identified with.
Mm. Jeremy, in our last segment, called Cracker Barrel's logo more of an illustration, not a logo. Would you agree with that? Or
I can see why he says that. In my opinion, maybe so. So for me, an illustration is something that has a lot more detail than just the simple marks, simple mm-hmm. typography, simple colors. The Uncle Herschel and mm-hmm. the barrel is more of an illustrative element within the brand, within the logo. I guess you could say it has a more illustrative layout, mm-hmm. but to me,
it's still a logo.
It's still a logo. To yeah. me, a logo is an identifiable mark that distinctively aligns with a brand, a product, personality. And so all logos don't have to be simplified to be identified as a logo, in my opinion.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about what goes into logo design with Amber Mayberry, from a graphic artist and owner of A. Paints Designs here in Columbus. Let's talk about font. You know, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to font. Whenever you're making a logo, whenever you're designing everything, everyone has an opinion on font. Mm-hmm. Everyone can't use the same font, right? Can they? You know, why are some fonts better than others?
Well, your font really gives a voice and a mm-hmm. feel to what you want the end user to perceive, in my opinion. So, for instance, a thin line font is more elegant, more whimsical. It may be softer. Something that's a little more bold, it gives them maybe more voice. And so when we are creating logos, it's very important to identify who we're speaking to, what we want them to say, and then aligning not only the fonts or typography elements typography elements, but making sure that they are in tune with what it is we want people to feel. So I guess I can go on, but in short, your fonts should align with the feel and the tone that you want the end user to pick up.
So when a company comes to you and says they want a brand refresh, what do you pay attention to the most? Like where do you start?
So generally, I start with a questionnaire. Anybody who's worked with me, I'm a very thorough designer. I think in the culture we live in with Fiverr and Vistaprint and all the quick templates everywhere and Canva, a lot of times we're just trying to get it done. So the things I'm asking are, what has not worked? What feedback are you getting from your actual customer base? So even back to Crackle Barrel, I'm wondering if they would have done a group study and gradually built this up if they would have gotten some feedback before they hit the fan in public view. So asking the questions of what's not working, what is working, so that we can create a strategic plan on what parts of our branding may need refreshed. Because when it comes to a rebrand, we don't necessarily have to paint every wall and change the decor. We don't have to do everything. But if there is something that's not working and we have pinpointed it through data or through connecting directly with our customer base, let's focus on that and then build up. So generally conversations, if we do need to do some data research, we just do all of those smaller details before we're making brand changes to the various elements of the company's brand identity.
Your client list includes the City of Columbus and Franklin University. Can you tell a story about something you did for either one of those? You can pick.
Okay. So actually, I'm a graphic designer who works contractually with a lot of variations of clients. With Franklin University, I'm generally doing like the commencement documents. So I'm not rebranding those elements, although we have done some projects to do things in some sister institutions. In regards to City of Columbus, I recently did a rebrand or development for the Office of Violence Prevention.
So an office within the city, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Because you know,
everyone needs their own brand.
Right. Yeah. Right. So it's kind of like a subgroup. This group is focusing on decreasing violence within the communities through programming, resources, etc. And so, when going into that particular project, I'm working along with a team, and we are basically doing the grassroots PR, backtracking, and making sure that what we are creating aligns with that particular brand. We had a peace sign actually in the logo. And so a good example of making sure that your logo aligns with the audience, we're trying to reach the younger audience and with that. So I think I answered your question.
Yeah. Well, this whole trend going towards simpler logos so that they can be seen better on Instagram and on social media apps, and just being more simple in general. Do you think that is that the way to go? Unless you're a complicated logo like Cracker Barrel, is simple the way to go?
I'm on the fence with this, just because logos can go both ways. I don't mind an illustrative, more detailed logo if it makes sense to do that. I will say, I think a rule of thumb, similar to what the other gentleman was sharing, is all logos should be easy, transferable, scalable. They should be able to be reverted in various colors. And sometimes the more detail we have takes away our ability to do that, right? But how about us having an illustrative logo, but then having a secondary logo, right, that we do use for our iconic elements or social media or what have you? In short, I think minimalistic, simple designs are great. Honestly, I think because mainstream, we've become so used to, can it fit in the social media bubble and look right in comparison to all the other LinkedIn, Facebook, etc. icons, that it has to look that way. But then that takes away creativity, right? Where does creativity go? If everyone's logo from here on to the future has to look like this, where are the creatives going to go to expand outside of that? So it can go both ways. I think, again, it's the why, yeah, and making sure it aligns with the narrative and the focus and the values of each person's individual brand or endeavor.
We have less than a minute left, but I wanted to know if you have a favorite logo. Is that a hard question?
I like Nike. Nike's always been my jam. Mm. And so, and the reason why, true to even what we're talking about here, years ago, before Nike became a thing, we didn't know what the Nike swoosh was, right? Mm-hmm. Over time, branding is a perception that's created over time through not just the mark, but all of the other components that surround that brand. And so Nike is great because it's simple, clean, but it's its own element that, you know, we've identified with, and they don't ever need to change, and they probably won't. So if I had to choose one, I would say Nike, especially because I'm all about the tagline, just do it.
We don't have time to talk about it because we have less than a minute, but they were thinking about changing the tagline to why do it and asking the why.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I think we can all agree with that. Maybe they were just floating that out there and they're not going to actually do it.
I hope not.
Let's stick with just do it. Amber, thank you so much for joining us today. Graphic artist and owner of A. Payne's Designs here in Columbus. Thanks for your time, Amber.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. At the foundation of every school building is a battle over taxes, spending, and fairness. Education is a fundamental right. The responsibility is clear. But who pays? That answer is not so clear. Listen to Untangled, The Cost of Learning, as we look at how we pay for Ohio schools. Subscribe to Untangled from WOSU, a part of the NPR network.